Hi, it's Dave. This morning, the Nikkei Asian Review came out with an article concluding that Tesla is 6 years ahead of the competition. In this video, I'm going to share my thoughts and take a deeper look onto Tesla's competitive advantage. The Nikkei Asian Review article from today has some great quotes. Here are some highlights. One stunned engineer from a major Japanese automaker examined the computer and declared, "We cannot do it." The real reason for holding off? Automakers worry that computers like Tesla's will render obsolete the parts supply chains that they have cultivated over decades, the engineer said. Such systems will drastically cut the number of electronic control units, or ECUs, in cars. For suppliers that depend on these components and their employees, this is a matter of life and death. So big automakers apparently feel obliged to continue using complicated webs of dozens of ECUs, while we only found a few in the Model 3. Put another way, the supply chains that have helped today's auto giants grow are now beginning to hamper their ability to innovate. All right, so here we have an article sharing how we have a Japanese engineer from one of the major automakers looking at Tesla's AI computer, onboard computer on their Model 3, and concluding that basically they have no chance, that they cannot do it. And it's interesting because he points the reason to their supply chain and how their supply chain is very rigid and unable to adapt to new changes. Now, there's a lot of Tesla fans and Tesla shareholders that are cheering on this article, saying, yes, Tesla is 6 years ahead. That's what I thought. And it's kind of used as a confirmation bias. Like, I knew that Tesla was ahead. And now there's this extra article confirming my belief. However, I call that type of analysis a rah-rah analysis. It's like a cheerleading analysis. You're not really looking deeper into things. You're just kind of cheering on the things that you want to believe that's going to happen. And this type of thinking really is dangerous as an investor because you want clear thinking, you want objective thinking, you want to go deeper and not just follow the emotions or the thoughts and attitudes of the crowd. Let's take a deeper look into what's going on. Let's look at the competition, exactly what challenges they're facing, and let's look at how Tesla operates and what their competitive advantage is. I think one of the core problems that existing automakers have is they have an infrastructure and a foundation that is resistant to innovation, to change. And along those lines, one of the key factors is that over the past decades, the auto industry has gradually shifted most all of their software and electronic expertise to suppliers. In other words, these automakers have chosen to focus on certain things that have higher margins or that are more integral to the essential core kind of mechanical parts of the car. For example, the automakers focus on the engine, the chassis, the suspension. They focus on assembly and the promotion and the distribution. And then they've decided to outsource all the other kind of more complicated and other parts of the car to various different suppliers. And so in a lot of ways, the current automakers don't really have control over, for example, a lot of the software that goes into the car. In fact, a lot of different parts of the car are controlled by different software that different suppliers are making. So they're not really compatible with each other. Several years ago, when Toyota was facing a sudden unintended acceleration complaint from thousands of owners, Toyota had a very difficult time isolating in their software what was going on. First of all, it wasn't their software. It was written by their suppliers, and their suppliers had this immense code base that Toyota couldn't really understand, and so it was this complete mess. And with these cars, there are many different electronic control units that are controlling various parts of the car. And each of these ECUs have software or firmware that is usually created by various suppliers. And all of these ECUs are not really compatible, or their software doesn't really talk with each other. So the focus of the current automakers are, let's make the big parts ourselves, like the engines and the chassis and suspension and assembly. And let's pour billions of dollars into marketing and distribute it through our franchise network. And that's kind of the business model of the current automakers. Now, this business model is dependent on two important factors. First, the automakers need scale because with economies of scale, they can bring their costs down and they can manage to eke out a profit. But the second factor is that there can't be some outstanding company that takes too much of the competition. In other words, the competition is kind of equal, and that allows all of these car companies to kind of follow the same business model. It reminds me back in the day pre-iPhone when you had a lot of different phones, like you had the Nokia phone and the BlackBerry phone and the Motorola phone. And all these phones are kind of just mediocre. And because the whole playing field was mediocre, then people were able to kind of survive in that field. It wasn't until you had an outstanding, far superior product that disrupted all of the other cell phones, then that's when the industry just went haywire. But in the car industry, as long as there's no disruptive company like Apple or a product like the iPhone, these car companies are content with just maintaining their market share, eking out profits, and running kind of a cost-optimized manufacturing operation. So this explains why automakers are so slow to adopt certain tech. For example, look at infotainment. These infotainment systems are so slow to evolve. You've got these slow screens and small screens, and they barely work with our modern phones. For example, try going out and finding a car that can actually connect to your iPhone using wireless CarPlay. These automakers are so slow to adopt new technology because first, they don't want to spend the extra costs because that's going to hurt their margins and they're already barely eking out profits. But second, the competition isn't forcing them to do because all of the automakers are following the same type of business model and they all are moving slow. And the car industry is kind of unique in the sense that you need billions and billions of dollars just to enter the market. Because if you don't have economies of scale where you're making hundreds of thousands, not millions of cars, you can't bring down the cost of the car enough to be competitive with the existing automakers. And that type of lack of competition from new players kind of lulls the automakers to sleep. They're not used to moving at a fast pace. They're not run by innovators and creative people or people willing to push the envelope. Rather, they're more run by people who are looking quantitatively, how can we pinch a few pennies here? And how can we optimize the cost and eke out a few extra dollars of profit. Now, this is fine as long as there's no disruptive technology that comes along that disrupts the entire auto industry. But however, as you know, there is disruptive technology. And the first big disruption is the electric car. And with the electric car, you need to integrate all of your software controls, all of these electronic controls, and you almost need to kind of start from scratch. However, as big as the electric car is this disruption, the even bigger disruption is autonomous driving. With autonomous driving, you're redefining the essence of the car. The main purpose of the car isn't for you to manually drive it anymore, but the purpose of the car now is to be driven by the car. And the whole focus of autonomous driving is software. Software is the main thing that will enable autonomous driving. However, the big problem for current automakers is real good software is super hard. You see, you can make mediocre or kind of low quality software fairly easy. However, if you want to make really good software that kind of just stands out and is a compelling product, it's very, very difficult to get all of the moving parts right. And of all of the software fields out there, autonomous driving and machine learning and AI is some of the most important and most difficult software fields we have today. To tell an automaker like Toyota or BMW or Mercedes, like, oh, you guys should make software to make autonomous cars and you should make an integrated car that where the software controls everything, that's kind of like telling them to build a reusable rocket that can shoot up into space and come back and refuel and be used again. I mean, it's practically impossible for an automaker that focuses more on mass manufacturing to pivot themselves and become a world-class software company. In order to be a world-class software company, you really need the management to be world-class software minds. They need to understand software. They need to understand disruption. They need to understand how software works, and they need to push their teams to the cutting edge and the bleeding edge of technology. And current management from automakers just don't have that background. And right now, they're just trying to preserve their jobs. They're not gonna willingly and voluntarily just resign and invite new management with software expertise. But then you have a bigger problem. Even if a Daimler or a BMW or a Toyota wanted to invest in software chops to become a software company, how are they gonna attract the talent? I mean, who really wants to go to work at Toyota? Sure, you might get some average or mediocre software programmers, but really, are you really gonna attract the best of the best, the cream of the crop, with the brightest minds who understand AI and who can make an autonomous driving system that's gonna be the first and the best in the world? I think one of the main points from the Nikkei Asian Review article from this morning was that these automakers don't wanna rile up things. They don't wanna get their suppliers angry. They don't want to put their suppliers out of business, and they don't want to put themselves out of business either. They don't want to see their profits decline. And because of that, there's this fixation on preservation, trying to preserve what they have because they're scared that it might be taken away from them. However, when you're in the middle of a tidal wave of innovation and technology, the only way to get out of that is you need to disrupt yourself. You need to come up with a far superior product that's riding the wave of technology and disrupt your own products. And for Tesla, it's a lot easier. They have an innovative CEO. They have the DNA of a software company. They're in Silicon Valley. They attract the best of the best. And they're pushing the envelope whenever they can to reinvent themselves. However, with other automakers, they have 40, 50, 60, 70 years of legacy to preserve. And they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the foundation, and most importantly, they don't have the values to disrupt themselves. What they do have is they have a very rigid system that's focused on cost optimization, that's relying on many, many suppliers to provide software and parts and to connect everything together. And in fact, this structure of a rigid cost optimization is actually structured against innovation. In other words, they've created a monster that they're not able to be flexible with and change. Now, of course, there are some companies that are open to software. For example, companies are going to be partnering with existing software solutions like Mobileye or NVIDIA or even Cruise. GM, several years ago, they bought Cruise Automation, a company out of Y Combinator in Silicon Valley, and they've poured billions and billions of dollars into this company that's focusing on autonomous driving. However, I have some major doubts about Cruise Automation. I mean, first, they have a reliance on LiDAR technology, which I think is not the way to go. Second of all, I think Cruise focuses is way too much on simulation over real-world driving. And third of all, I don't think they have the integrated package that Tesla offers with their autopilot and autonomous driving chip already integrated with all their cars. All of these automakers are going to try. They're going to start to spend billions of dollars to try to adapt and to try to change their trajectory. However, the key question is, can they rile up things enough? And can they reinvent themselves? Can they change their values and the way they operate and their culture to become a disruptive software or tech company themselves? And if they're unable to do that, then they're just left to being a car manufacturer. But in this modern world and in this upcoming century, I don't know what room there is really for a so-called car manufacturer. I think that's gonna be a low value add industry. And in a world that's increasingly going with robotics and AI and software technology, I don't know if these car manufacturing focused companies are gonna survive more than 10 or max 15 years. 6 or 7 years ago, I was writing a long post on a Tesla forum, and I titled the post, "The Slow Motion Train Wreck." And it's basically a post that details how these automakers are just resistant to change. They've set up a foundation, an infrastructure and values and a whole system that is resistant to innovation. And because of that, it's like a slow motion train wreck that you almost see in front of your eyes happening, and yet you can't steer the train in a different direction. It's like headed into a crash. And that's what it kind of feels with a lot of these existing automakers. All right, if you haven't subscribed to my channel, I encourage you to do so. In this channel, we're looking at investing, but through a deeper lens. We're not just trying to follow the crowd and go with emotions or shallow reactions. Rather, we're taking a deeper look, looking at objective analysis and really looking at through a lens of quantitative and qualitative, bringing together technology and liberal arts together in our analysis. If you haven't watched my last video on Steve Jobs versus Elon Musk, I encourage you to do so because I think it provides a foundation of understanding to help us understand disruptive companies a little bit deeper. All right, for the rest of this video, I'm gonna answer a few questions. The first question is, can you give us an update on SpaceX's launch of new Starlink satellites today? All right, so today Starlink launched their Starlink 5 launch, and it's basically their fifth launch for Starlink satellites. Each launch has carried 60 satellites into orbit. So currently they have now 300 Starlink satellites in low Earth orbit. This launch successfully launched the 60 satellites. However, the booster kind of failed to land on the landing pad in the ocean. It rather landed right next to it in the ocean. And they're saying that it was a difficult mission because they're placing these satellites into something called an elliptical orbit, which made it more challenging for the satellite to come back. Elon Musk has stated that they need at least 400 satellites to provide minimal coverage and about 800 satellites to provide moderate coverage. And I think SpaceX is racing to try to get some minimal or moderate coverage for Starlink by the end of the year. I believe their goal is to try to come up with their pizza box satellite antenna and try to actually provide some coverage for people in the northern US and Canada. Now, with each launch of Starlink satellites, SpaceX is learning many new things. Now imagine you launch your 60 satellites into space and you do a massive round of testing. And you have hundreds of engineers just going at it, and they're coming up with improvements. And after a month or two, you're integrating these improvements into the next batch of Starlink satellites. And so what we have with Starlink and the five launches is you have five iterative improvements of all these satellites. And so this fifth batch of satellites are gonna be far better than the first batch of satellites. And this is the way of innovation and the way that kind of Elon Musk operates. This is why SpaceX and Starlink is in the lead, and it's why other companies are gonna have a hard time catching up. All right, the next question comes from Simply Julian. He says, "Hi Dave, what are your thoughts on SBCE or Virgin Galactic? Does it qualify as a generational stock in your opinion, or at $28, is it already speculative?" And Miraj Lung says, nice video, thanks for sharing your perspective. Dave, what's your thoughts on SPCE Virgin Galactic? All right, so if you've watched my past videos, I've started to give a framework of how we can evaluate what a 10X generational company is. Now, we're looking for 10X gains within 5 to 10 years. Now, this is my own personal grid for investing, and it might be very different than what you're wanting. You might not want a 10X gain within 5 or 10 years, and you might be leaning to more conservative investments, and that's totally fine. Each individual situation is different. However, in my case, when I'm looking for a 10X gain, and I'm looking for these companies that can really deliver, some of the key factors is, first, I'm looking for a product that is far superior than anything else in this class, and that company has better have the ability to defend that superiority over time. The main reason why I'm looking for this criteria is because I want a margin of safety of sorts. I don't want a company that's like head to head with 3 or 4 other companies and their product is like very similar. Now, I want a product from a company that's far superior and that superiority can be defended over time. And that gives me more confidence as an investor that this company will be able to excel and defend its lead. So through that lens, if we look at Virgin Galactic, my question is their product really far superior than anything else out there? And is their technology really unique? Is it something that others are gonna have a hard time copying or keeping up with? Another angle and another criteria I have is they need to be able to go head to head with the best companies in the world and win. In other words, they need world-class execution. And this matters because when a company is trying to go 10X, let's say they're trying to massively grow as a company, they need to enter adjacent markets because their current market is not gonna be big enough to justify a huge valuation. So as they enter into adjacent markets, they're gonna tackle on harder and harder competitive companies. And in order to do so, their execution really needs to be top notch. They need to be able to go against the Googles and the Amazons and the Apples of this world. So with Virgin Galactic, my big question is, will they be able to go head on with SpaceX? Now, some people might say, oh, they're in different categories. Virgin Galactic wants to do space tourism and SpaceX wants to colonize Mars. However, I think that's kind of a naive view of SpaceX and the industry. See, if SpaceX viewed space tourism as a lucrative business, and for example, if they're already billions of dollars of revenue to be gained through space tourism, I don't think Elon Musk would hesitate to enter into the space tourism industry and to finance and support his greater mission to Mars. Further, I think already SpaceX is already on the verge of entering into space tourism in a lot of ways. Look at their Starship. They're looking to go into space to go to other cities, and they have already plans to colonize the moon. As a Virgin Galactic investor, you might think that, oh yeah, the space industry is huge and there's gonna be room for Virgin Galactic and SpaceX. But however, the competition is tough and it's intense. And my big question is, can Virgin Galactic go head to head with SpaceX and win? And when I think about it like that, I just don't know who in their right mind would want to go head to head with Elon Musk and SpaceX. Now, SpaceX is even perhaps even a greater priority to Elon Musk than Tesla. He wants SpaceX to succeed at all costs. And with that type of innovator in charge, I'm not sure like what other companies are really gonna have a standing chance. However, space is huge. We're talking about an industry that potentially could go on centuries and centuries. It can be like hundreds of trillions of dollars in market cap value. So there's bound to be like a second place winner or a third place winner. However, rather than Virgin Galactic, I kind of lean toward more Jeff Bezos and his Blue Origin company. See, Jeff Bezos has billions and billions of dollars that he could spend into his Blue Origin's company, and he can kind of indefinitely just kind of fund this company and grow it. And I think Jeff Bezos is very serious about that. And so when you have SpaceX and you have Blue Origins, it's like with Virgin Galactic, I'm just not sure how much space there is for them. Anyways, I'm not making a definitive conclusion on Virgin Galactic. Rather, I'm just kind of posing some questions and looking at this company through a lens of a 10X investor. And in my opinion, I think there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. And I'm open to learning more. So if you have some great information, put it in the comments and I'll check them out. All right, I want to encourage you to share this video with your friends, put it on Facebook, on Reddit, put it on forums, email it out, get the word out and share the message about this channel. Also, I've put up a website at www.davelee.tv. And on that website, you can do two things. First, you could submit a video question. So you can just record a question on your phone and upload it on that website, and I'll take a look at it and I'll try to add some video questions to my upcoming videos. The second thing you can do is you can add an idea or suggestion. So if you have an idea for my channel, you can go ahead and suggest it there. And also, the YouTube comments are still gonna be a great space to interact. I'm gonna continue to look at them and read them and engage as much as I can. So anyways, have a great day and we'll see you in my next video. Thanks.